didn't do that on purpose.
Stupid.
That's cute.
This week's parsha gives us a tremendous opportunity to develop somewhat of a character analysis of Paro, which lichura has a bearing on all of us. The parsha relates the initial plagues that came upon Paro and on the Egyptian people, Bichlal. The first plague was the plague of Dam, the Makkah of Dam. And after Moshe and Aaron go through the process of causing the waters of Mitzrayim to turn into blood, the Torah says that Vayasu Kain Chartume Mitzrayim Bolateim, that the Chartumim, the sorcerers or the magicians of Mitzrayim, were able to do the same thing. They were also successful by using their methods of sorcery to turn water into blood. And as a result, Paro locked himself into his position of not listening to Moshe and Aaron, became obstinate and said he's not going to let Klal Yisrael leave Mitzrayim. The second plague was the plague of the frogs, plague of the Tzfardim. There as well, the Pasuk says, Vayasu Kain Bilateim, that the Egyptian magicians managed to do the same thing, and they also managed to bring frogs, and Vayar Paroi, Paroi saw this. And after Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron removed the plague of the Sfaradim, again, the Torah says that Paro became locked into his position, became obstinate. Again, an expression in the Torah of Hachbodas Halev. And again, Paro retracts from his original agreement to allow Klal Yisrael to leave Mitzrayim. And again, a third plague has to come. And the third plague was the plague of the lice, the kinim. There again, the Pasuk says for a third time that Vayasu Kain Hachartumim Bilateim, that the Egyptian magicians also managed to create such a situation. Sorry, There again it says that the Egyptians tried to create such a situation, and v'lo yachaylu. Here already they didn't have the ability to be able to do this, and Rashi brings the Chazal why they weren't able to do this, and the plague that Moshe and Aaron brought of the kinim. The pasuk says, "Vatihi akinim be'adam u'behema." It attacked both the animals and the human beings. And at this point, when the Chartumim announce or say, after they see that they don't have the ability to be able to do what Moshe and Aaron just did, the Chartumim say to Paroi, "Vayemru haChartumim el Paroi, etzba Elokim hu." Here, the Chartumim aren't able to do something which Moshe and Aaron are able to do. And here, the Chartumim, as it were, announce to Paroi and say very clearly, we can't compete with this, therefore, etzba Elokim hu. And the normal Pashita understanding of this is, etzba Elokim hu, this is the hand of God. This is through divine intervention. Here we give up. Here we throw up our hands and say that until now it is very possible that what Moshe and Aaron were doing was simply an act of sorcery. V'horaya, the proof being that we can do it as well. But as far as the plague of Kinim is concerned, we can't say that anymore. We can't say that this was just simply an act of sorcery. V'horaya, we can't do it. Therefore, there is no choice, say the Chartumim, but to say that etzba Elokim hu. That's the Pashta Pshat. But if that would be the Pshat, then if on the first two occasions, when the plagues were, as it were, proven by the Chartumim, by the success of the Chartumim to imitate them, that they were just simply an act of sorcery, and therefore the reaction of Paroi is Hachbodas Aleiv, locking him in his position and saying, you're coming to me with a taina that you're messengers from God, Vaharaya, you're doing Moifsim, Vaharaya, you're doing in front of me things were actually acts of God's, you're phonies. Because my Chartumim can do the same thing, so why should I take any notice of what you're saying, Shalach Esami V'Avduni? Why should I take any notice? The whole thing is a con job anyway. Therefore, I'm going to lock myself into my position. That makes sense. Therefore, now, when the Chartumim are coming along and the Chartumim are saying we can't do this, and because we can't do this, therefore etzba Elokim hu, what should be the reaction of Paroi? The reaction of Paroi should be, okay, you guys win. Here I can't argue that you're con men. Here I can't argue that you're phonies. Here I can't argue that you just did this through sorcery, because even my Chartumim are made the etzba Elokim hu. And therefore, the result of this plague should be Paroi immediately acquiescing and agreeing and saying, okay, you guys win. Yet nevertheless, notwithstanding the fact that the Chartumim couldn't imitate what Moshe and Aaron did, and notwithstanding the fact that the Chartumim themselves are announcing and saying to Paroi, etzba Elokim hu, what's the reaction of Paroi? B'chur, as we said, he should have surrendered immediately. No. How does the pasuk carry on? Vayechzak leiv paroi v'loi shoma aleihem. Again, hachbodes aleiv. And b'chur, it's tmua. B'chur, it's a pella. Why the hachbodes aleiv? Makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. The fifth makkah is the makkah of Dever. And Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron come to Paroi and they say to Paroi, you know what's going to happen? Hine yad Hashem hoyo b'miknecha asher b'soda. A plague is going to attack miknecha asher b'soda, your possessions in the fields, namely susim, chameirim, gmolim, bokot, tsoim. And it's going to be a deva kovei miyoyt. And not only that, but v'haf le'ashem bein mikne Yisrael u'bein mikne Yitzrayim v'loy yomus mikol livnei Yisrael dovo. The plague is only going to affect the Mitzrayim, say Moshe and Aaron. The plague will not affect in any way at all Am Yisrael. And what happens? The Torah continues and says, "Vayomos kol mikne Mitzrayim." Exactly as Moshe and Aaron say, all the mikne of Mitzrayim dies. Umi mikne b'nei Yisrael v'meis echod. Not one item of Klal Yisrael gets affected in any way whatsoever from this plague. And what is Paro's reaction? Says the pasuk, Vayishlach Paroi. Paroi says, this is very strange. This is a phenomena that we haven't encountered before. Here we have a nevuah from Moshe Rabbeinu in the name of his God, quote unquote, telling me that he's going to bring a plague which is going to affect the Egyptians, but it's not going to affect the Jews. And there are rumors going around that the truth of the matter is that it happened exactly the way that Moshe and Aaron said it would happen, and that the Egyptians were affected and the Jews weren't affected. Says Paroi, Vayishlach Paroi, let me go and find out whether these rumors are true. Let me go and find out whether this really happened, whether this distinction between Am Yisrael and the Mitzrayim. Vehine. And after he sends people out to investigate, they come back. Vehine. And behold, what do they report to Paro? What does Paro find out? Lo meis mi mikne Yisrael ad echot. Not one possession of any Jew was affected by this plague whatsoever, exactly in the way that Moshe and Aaron said would happen. And again, he sees clearly that Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron have been nisnabe b'shem Hashem, that there is going to be a difference as to the effect of the plague amongst the Egyptians and the effect of the plague amongst the Jewish people. And it happens exactly the way that Moshe and Aaron say it's going to happen. He sees clearly that the Ribbono Yisraelim is mafli bein Yisrael and Mitzrayim. Exactly as was said. Which obviously should lead him to a conclusion. Again, the Khartoumim, they can't do it. Again, Moshe Rabbeinu says a very clear-cut nevuah b'shem Hashem as to what's going to happen. And it happens exactly the way that Moshe Rabbeinu says it. And l'chura, there's absolutely no logic in what's going on. So what's the conclusion that Paro should come to? They're obviously not phonies. They're obviously telling the truth. What is the result? After he sends out people to investigate, and after the investigators come back, and after he finds out that it's exactly true, and it exactly happened the way that Moshe Rabbeinu said it would happen, and Aaron said it would happen, what's the result? Says the Pasuk again, Kvedus Lev, on the part of Pare, V'loy Sholach Es Ha'om. What's going on here? But even more, we jumped from the third plague to the fifth plague. But between the third plague and the fifth plague, there was another plague, the fourth one. And the fourth plague was the wild animals that came. And what happened when the wild animals came? Nishchas kol ha'oretz b'pnei harev. Egypt was destroyed. These wild animals that came, they attacked. Who did they attack? Egypt. Except for one place, Goshen. Goshen didn't have the plague. And there again, already by the fourth plague, Paro sees clearly that the Ribbono Shel Olam must be behind this, because the plague is differentiating between the Egyptians and the Jews, and there's no way in which Lichura he can explain it, and the Chartumim can't imitate it, and it's happening exactly the way in which Moshe Rabbeinu says it and Aaron say it's going to happen. And yet there again, what's his conclusion in the fourth plague? The same thing. Hachbaras Alev. But what makes it really strange is that when it comes that to the plague, to the fifth plague, he goes out investigating what happened in the previous one, the fourth one. Why there already, where the same thing exactly happened, there was a differential between Am Yisrael and Mitzrayim, there he doesn't send anybody to find out. And besides all that, what's the point in investigating whether it happened the way that Moshe Rabbeinu said it's going to happen, if anyway you're going to take no notice of it? In the fifth plague anyway he takes no notice, and there's Achbaras Alev afterwards. So it was a futile exercise to send people out to find out if the plague took place exactly the way that Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron said it would take place, if anyway he's not going to react, if anyway he takes no notice of it. So maybe one could explain it in the following manner. I think that there's a tremendous yesod being told to us here in the parsha in connection with human behavior in general, which has a tremendous musar haskel in real practical terms for us as well. The first three plagues, lichura, had absolutely no influence on Paroi whatsoever. Why? Because the Chartumim were able to imitate those plagues. Therefore, what was the reaction of Paro? Why should I chapis bilis from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron are coming to me and telling me that this is coming from God? If my Chartumim can do the same thing, then obviously this isn't an act of God, but this is an act of Kishuf. And if it's an act of Kishuv, big deal. Mitzrayim was full of people who knew how to do these sort of things. It's no great big deal. It doesn't prove anything. Therefore, the fact that the first three plagues had absolutely no effect on Paro whatsoever, from Paro's viewpoint, was totally justified. And in fact, even from the viewpoint of an objective outsider, we can understand why they didn't have an effect on Paro. Because he had a very good way of answering to himself as to why he shouldn't take any notice of the plagues. When it came to the plague of Kinim, and the Khartoumim weren't successful to create Kinim, and Paro couldn't explain this to himself, using the argument that, nah, this is nothing, this is just a Maisik Shofin. He couldn't use that any argument because the Khartoumim couldn't do it. He had to find an alternative answer or an alternative reason to be able to keep his position. He didn't want to let Klal Yisrael go. That was his starting point. I'm not letting Klal Yisrael go. But he has to justify his position. So, plague number one didn't move him because he could still continue to justify his position. There is no God doing this to me. It's a pure Maisik Shofim. Plague number two also didn't influence him in any way because he had a total justification for his position. This isn't an act of God. This is a Maisik Shofim. Plague number three, again, he had a terrific justification for his position. This isn't an act of God. This is just a Maisa Shofim. That's all. Plague number four, he's stuck all of a sudden. He can't explain this as a Maisa Shofim. On the other hand, he doesn't want to let Klal Yisrael go. So he has to find a justification. And he has another problem as well. And what's the other problem that he has? Why is it that these plagues all of a sudden are affecting the Mitzrayim, but they're not affecting the Jews? Surely this should spark some type of question in the mind of Paro. Says Paro, no problem. I understand perfectly what's going on here. If you're going to ask me, why does the Makkah, why does the plague affect the Egyptian, and the plague doesn't affect the Jew, what are you going to tell me? Yeah, plague took place. In Goshen, nothing happened. In Mitzrayim, it happened. Well, it's obvious. Chazal tell us, the weather in Goshen was different from the weather in Mitzrayim. So if the climate is different, then maybe they don't like this climate, so they're not coming to Goshen. Chazal say that one of the milers of Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim was that there was no intermarriage. There was one occasion, say Chazal, where a Jewish woman had a relationship with an Egyptian. Other than that, it didn't happen. There was no such thing. Well, if so, there's a different genetic build of the Jew to the Egyptian. Totally different genetics. There was never any intermarriage. So if you're telling me that something affected Egyptians and it didn't affect Jews, it's very simple why. First of all, the Jews live in a particular area. So first of all, the weather in that area is different from the weather anywhere else. Second of all, the Jews have a different genetic content than the non-Jews have. Therefore, there are certain things which genetically affect non-Jews and don't genetically affect Jews. It could be the other way around as well, can happen sometimes. It just so happens by Mikra that this is what happened here. Therefore, seeing that he had the ability to justify himself, and this is the first time also that such a thing happens, that there's this differential, that there's this difference. Yes, it happened already in the case of the blood, but there it happened in terms of the water. It didn't happen in terms of the people. So therefore he says to himself, maybe it's just a mikra. Maybe it's just coincidence. It doesn't prove anything to me. And in fact, this is what the Chartumim said to Paroi. Because what do the Chartumim say to Paroi when they are not matzliach to do what Moshe and Aaron can do? They turn around to Paroi and they say to Paroi, Etzba Elokim hu. And we always understand Etzba Elokim hu to mean, this is the hand of God. That's not what they meant. Because there's a question here. Why do they use the expression Etzba Elokim? Why don't they use the expression Etzba Hashem, Etzba Havaya? Why don't they use the Yudke Vovke name with Ribbono Shel? Why do they say Etzba Elokim? Say the Sifrei Kabbalah. What is the difference between the Shem Elokim and the Shem Havaya? So we know there's a difference Lagabe Midas Adin and Lagabe Midas Achesed, right? There's all different suggestions, all of which are true, as to what is the difference between Etzba the difference between the Shem Elokim and the Shem Havaya. Say the Sifrei Kabbalah, if you look in Parshas Bereishis, the Bria of Shemayim Va'oretz, the Bria of the world, the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam that's used is Elokim. When the Ribbono Shel Olam creates the Olam HaTeva, the name that the Ribbono Shel Olam uses when he's creating Teva is Elokim. The name Yudke Vovke is always used when we're talking about the relationship of the Ribbono Shel Olam to things which are Me'al HaTeva, to things which are supernatural. This is exactly what the Chartumim said to Moshe Rabbeinu. On the first three occasions they were able to imitate what Moshe and Aaron did, so they said, forget it, it's Ma'aseh Shofim. Then arose a situation where they couldn't imitate what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing. So they turned around to Paroi and they said, don't worry about that either. Etzba Elokim, who? It's Teva. It's because of the genetic difference between the Jews and the non-Jews. It's because of the gland. It's because of the Goshen. It's a quirk of nature. It's Etzba Elokim. Elokim meaning nature. Therefore, don't get scared about it. Paroi says, you're right. You're right. And therefore there was Hachbada Slav on the part of Paroi. However, all these arguments Paroi could use to himself, Kol Zman, that the Makkos were affecting the Guf. Kol Zman, these were Makkos that were attacking human beings. Then Paroi could come along and justify himself and say, I don't have to chapis pilus from this. Why? It's something to do with the nature of the Jew and the nature of the non-Jew. Something to do with the physical build of the Jew and the non-Jew. Something to do with the genetic background of the Jew and the non-Jew. Once you say it's genetic, then you have the ability to argue that it can be even in one country. It can even be at one time, but there is the possibility of there being a genetic difference. The minute the Dever came, he got stuck with a problem. There was a plague of Dever. What happened? It wasn't a Makkah in the Guf, it was a Makkah in the possessions. What does the Pasuk say? That the Ribbono Shel Olam was mavdil between what? Between mikneh, of the Jew and mikne of the Egyptian. Mikne, what does mikne mean? Mikne means possessions. The animals of the Jew and the animals of the non-Jew. Here already Pari says, 1 minute. This is something that we have to investigate. We didn't have to investigate the previous occasion when there was a difference between the Mitzri and the Jew, because there was a plague which attacked the Guf. On the Guf I have a good theory as to why. But when it comes to the Mikne, what am I going to argue? There's no difference in the animal, in the genetic build of the animal, whether if it belongs to the Egyptian or it belongs to the Jew. It's the same animal. A behemoth is a behemoth. What's he going to argue himself first? He says, first, he says, let's go and find out what's going on here. And that's why here, Vayishlach, that's why here he decided to send somebody to find out what's going on. Is it true? Did it happen? Because if it happens, we've got a problem. And they come back and they say, yes, it happened. And Lechura, all his answers come to an end. What's he going to do now? Now he's stuck. Now he sees in front of him that this is something which is supernatural, which can't be explained by Kshofim, it can't be explained by nature. What are we going to do about this? He has no choice but to scream that it's Yad Hashem. Yet what happens? Achbar Salev. He takes absolutely no notice of it whatsoever. Why not? Because he's able to justify to himself this as well. How does he justify to himself this? If you look at the Seder Amakus, you find a very interesting thing. And we just mentioned it. First, the Makus affected what? The actual guf of the Mitzrayim. Then, the Makus moved over from the guf of the Mitzrayim to the possessions. To the animals, to the sheep, to the horses, to whatever it was. Chazal say, Ein bal harachamim pegea benefoshes tchila. What is the sign of a ruler who is a bal harachamim? That when he has to punish, he won't start off punishing by attacking the guf of the people he wants to punish. Because that is a stira, say Chazal. That is a contradiction to rachamim. Dictators who want to retain rule, when there is a minor revolt, the first thing they do is kill 5,000 people. You kill 5,000 people, everyone becomes quiet. If you want to impress that you are the boss here and don't dare start up with me, then the minute there's any type of revolution whatsoever, you immediately go to the extreme, you immediately kill them all. In a democracy, it doesn't work like that. In a democracy, when you want to punish, you first try fining people. That doesn't work, give them a prison sentence. That doesn't work, gas him, put him in the electric chair, give him an injection. In other words, therein lies the difference. And if so, the question arises, why did the Ribbono Shel Olam do it this way around, Taka? Why did the Ribbono Shel Olam start off, instead of going min hakala lakoved, instead of going from the easier punishment to the harder punishment, he goes the other way around. He goes from the harder punishment to the easier punishment. Let's try and imagine for a moment what's going on in the mind of Paro. I think it's very simple what was going on in the mind of Paro. I think that what was going on in the mind of Paro was that he is a tremendous benevolent ruler of Egypt, and if you really want to see where his benevolence comes out the most, And if you really want to see what a kind and what a good-hearted and what a devoted ruler he is, Pari would have said, take my treatment of the Jews and you will see really what a nice guy I am. Why? Because everything that I did to the Jewish people, I did for their benefit. And in fact, if you're talking about a malchus shel chesed, I am the greatest malchus shel chesed that ever existed. Here came a people who were starving. They were in the middle of a famine. They had nothing to eat. And they had nowhere to go. And I, out of the kindness of my heart, take him in to my country. And not only do I take him into my country, but I give them full status. They're not some Mexican refugee who has to hide under a false social security number. They are citizens, equal citizens. And they can have food the same as my country has food, and I give it to them. And not only do I do that, I give them their own homeland. I say, set up an autonomous, independent Jewish state in Goshen. Elamai, I made them work a bit for me. Adam la'omol yulod. It's a pasuk in their Torah. Person is born in order to work. Their own rabbis tell us. Batola mevi lidei shimum. If a person doesn't work, he gets to boredom. If he gets to boredom, we all know what happens after boredom. Just look around. So if I made them work a little bit, I did them a huge favor. You think it was too much? It's a yoke on them. Toiv lagever ki Yisrael, says the pasuk. It's good for a person to have. He was a bar mussar. He was an ekmashgiach par excellence. See that again? I'm the most benevolent person around. I will tell me I threw a couple of kids into a river. So I killed a couple of 100,000 babies. Do you realize what these people would have suffered if we would have let these babies live? Do you know what's going on here? Six at a time every year? Every 9 months, six at a time? He was the first left-wing, liberal, blue-blooded, pro-abortionist. I'm doing it for them. There's no way economically they can survive if they've got this rate of reproductivity. It's just not going to happen. Okay, so they weren't so sophisticated in those days. They didn't know how to do it in the sophisticated way that we do it. We're still throwing babies in rivers and killing them, left, right, and center. Millions every year in America. Anybody ever turned around and said that Martin Luther Obama happens to be a paro? No. He's just a blue-blooded liberal left-wing Democrat, which is perfectly legitimate. Totally legitimate. Every single shibud that paro placed on Klal Yisrael, every single gzeira that paro placed on Klal Yisrael, he found a way of justifying it, that it's a Maisa Tzidkus and it's a Maisa Chesed. And therefore, everything that Moshe Rabbeinu is doing is the biggest tragedy for Klal Yisrael. Because what's Moshe Rabbeinu trying to do? What's he coming to me and telling me to do? He's coming and telling me, take these people and take them where? Into a desert. There's no food, there's no water, Klal Yisrael themselves started complaining afterwards that you took us out into a place where there's a Chanavis Hadogah, we remember what we had in Mitzrayim, and then you took us into a place where there's no food and there's no water. This man is mad. He wants to kill them in a desert. And he's coming to me and he's telling to me what? Listen to the ridiculousy of this man, Moshe. He's coming to me saying to me that Yudkei Vavkei told him. Yudkei Vavkei represents Chesed. Told him that he should go and take these people to die in the desert. And he's telling me that this is from the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is not coming from the Ribbono Shel Olam. It can't be coming from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why? Because even he admits, Lefi Shittaso of Moshe Rabbeinu, that his God is a God of mercy. A God of mercy doesn't bring plagues. First on the goof, And then on the Mikneh, he does it the other way around. At the Chalamdin as well, he's not only a Bal Musa, Pare. He knows all the Lamdas behind it. He says, it can't be. Therefore, even if this is happening, and even if I can't explain this, B'derech HaTeva, but it can't be coming from God, from the Jews' God. That can't be. Doesn't make the slightest bit of sense. Vayishlach Pare. Pare said, let me see what's going on here. Vehine loy mes mi miknes Yisrael ad echod. And therefore I can't place the reasoning that I used beforehand. But nevertheless, Vayechabir es liboy. Because obviously it's not coming from God. It can't be coming from God. He's got a new justification now. He's the Ish Chesed and Moshe is the Achzer. Pare is continuously being shown that he's wrong, and he keeps on going with his shitta that he's doing all this with Tevasim Shal Yisrael, and that's why he doesn't want to send them away. And then he goes a stage further. And he says, you know what? I'm crazy. I'm doing my very best to protect these people, and they want to shoot themselves in the leg. They want to go off in the midbar. You know, why should I do this? If these people are suicidal, let them be suicidal. So he turns around to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know what? You guys want to go? Go, Gesunta Hate. I give up. I did my best to look after you, and I give up. But you can go. The mature people can go. The older people can go. Because you can make your own decisions, and you want to be suicidal, be suicidal. But I, as the Baal Chesed, cannot let you take your children. They are my responsibility. I have to die for your kids. That your kids should die in the desert? After I went out of my way to protect them by killing a few hundred thousand babies in order that the other ones should survive and have a good life, you now want to take these babies out into the desert and kill them? No way. You can't take them. Says Moshe Rabbeinu to him. Therefore, Pare says sorry to Moshe Rabbeinu. You want to go? Fine. V'mimimi ha'olchim. Who are going to go? And when Moshe Rabbeinu answers him and says, Binu'reinu ubiskeinenu neilech, we're all going. Even the kids are going. But v'neinu v'neiseinu, we're going to take with everybody. Pare says, I, the great man of Chesed, cannot allow you to take the kids there. You yourself want to be suicidal, you can be suicidal. Kira of neged pneichem. Because there's a famine out there in the desert, this is suicidal. Therefore, lechuna agvarim. If the adults want to go, fine. Ki oiso atem evakshim. Because you dafka want to be suicidal, you can do it, but I can't allow you to take the kids. He's still convincing himself that he's the great Baal Chesed, who's been daigening for Klal Yisrael. And then what happens? It's unbelievable. To the bitter end. It gets to the end of Makkos Becheiros. It gets to the whole, that the story's over, the parsha's over. The man has been defeated, totally, completely, proven, conclusively wrong. What does he turn around to Moshe Rabbeinu and say to Moshe Rabbeinu? You know what? Get the heck out of here. All of you. Gamatem. You, and even the ones I was trying to protect, even the children, Gam b'nei Yisrael, let them go as well. Bat ubirachtem gamoisi. Give me a bracha. Because I was the biggest Baal Chesed who ever had Jews by me. You hear what's going on here? Yirmiyo Anovi says the following. Yirmiyahu Hanavi says that the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Klal Yisrael when he's admonishing Klal Yisrael, and he says the following. He says, it's the Haftarah that we read on Parshas Maaseh. Gam biknofayich. Even in the hems of your garments, nimtzu dam nefoshes evyeinim nekiim. Where's the blood of poor, innocent people that you killed? Not because you killed them justifiably, that they were coming to steal from you, and you have the right, if a Boba Machteris, you have the right to kill him. And you know what? Vatimri, you have the chutzpah to say, Kini Kasi, I'm clean, I'm innocent. Hinani Nishpat Oisach, you know why I'm going to judge you, says God? Al Omreich Leichotosi, because you're tining Leichotosi. Says Rashi, Al Omram Leichotosi. Yirmiyahu HaNavi says what? That the Ribbono Shel Olam has two tainas on Klal Yisrael. Vatomri, that you're saying, Kini Kasi, I'm innocent. Imreich Leichotosi, says Rashi, where are you saying this? Belibcha. To yourself. Ika Mishpot, says Yirmiyahu HaNavi, is not the chet that a person does. It's the statement afterwards. Loi chotosi. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm perfect. The Gemara says in Saita that what's the definition of hypocrites? Ma'aseihem kemaisa zimri. They do acts of taiva like zimri, umavakshim schar kepinchas. And the normal pshat that we learn there is that people are full of contradictions. On the one hand, they're doing ma'asim, and on the other hand, they're doing ma'asim ro'im. And what are they asking for? They're conveniently forgetting about their avayos, and they're asking the Ribbono Shel Olam every time they daven, give me schar on my mitzvahs. Says Rebbe Rucham, it's not pshat. Oisem ma'asim zimri, they're doing ma'asim zimri, and mevakshim schar kepinchas on the ma'asim zimri. They're justifying themselves, and they're saying what we did is fine. That's the limit of this week's parasha. And we see this day in, day out. Right? You have a guy, he doesn't turn up for davening. Right? And if he does come, he walks in 20 minutes late, and he walks out 20 minutes early, and he walks in with his cigarette, and he walks out with his cigarette. He turns up in Seder maybe 5 minutes every 3 days. Right? No. And he sits through a schmooze, and he doesn't listen to a word, and he's laughing, and he's smiling, and he's looking this way, and he's looking that way, and he's playing around as if he's a 4-year-old retard. And then when you say to him, why are you doing here? Why don't you go and do something useful in life? Go and work. You know, stack shelves in a supermarket and do something for humanity. What do you mean? I'm a shivabach. You're a retard who's doing nothing. I'm a shivabach. I was in the schmooze yesterday. You physically sat in a schmooze. Your minus IQ couldn't even grasp if the person saying the schmooze was flashing pictures at you. So who are you trying to kid? Who are you trying to fool? You can't read a straight line. 3 years you've been sitting in a yeshiva and you can't even read a straight line in Hebrew. I'm steiging. That's pari. That's pari. Vatayimru loy chotasi. Nikesi. Bilom lived with a chamor. Mr. Bilom and Mrs. Chamor. And what does he turn around and what does he say to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Tomus nafshi mois yeshorim. Why? Because the fact that I happen to be the president of the local branch of Protect the Chamorim organization, which I took a little bit to the extreme, but in essence, I'm doing it slowly. Slowly, I'm getting there. Slowly. I'm moving. Slowly. Every single one of us does this the whole time. Continuously. We do nothing and convince ourselves that we're busy the entire day. You come into supper and you sit down. Whoa, today was a hard day. Today was a hard day. Now, if you come in and you say to me, today was a hard day because I have sprained thumbs, then that's totally justifiable. I accept that because a guy who sits for 16 hours going like this has strained thumbs. Fine, I have no problem with that. But you got a guy sitting there who says, oh, today was a hard day. The learning and the davening.
Learning? What learning? Do you know, I saw today, it's classic. I've been watching a guy for 3 days. No names will be mentioned. I've been watching a guy for 3 days. Right? He comes to davening. I must give him his credit. He comes to davening. He comes to davening, not every day, but he comes enough that you shouldn't be able to notice that he's not there in davening. But he's got a tremendous style, and I appreciate it. I think it's gewaldig. In fact, I wish I had a possibility of a video of the thing. He walks in here with the Gemara, walks up to there, and then walks out again with the Gemara. It's great, because anybody who sees him holding a Gemara. He doesn't open the Gemara. Chas v'shalom. No way. He just walks with the Gemara. And then I'm saying, what goes on in this guy's mind? As he comes back in again with the Gemara and puts the Gemara back on the shelf, he says to himself, whoa, good day's learning. Good day's learning. Retard! No way! And if I call him a retard, he gets all upset. No, 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 he would never do that. He's mechazakas. Mechazak what? Walking around with a Gemara? What are you grinning at? Think about yourself. Well, that's the limud of this week's parasha. Yeah.